Believe it or not, it's Friday already, and we're going to have the honor and privilege tomorrow of reading Parshas Naso. Parshas Naso begins with the Bracha Nasoas Rosh Bnei Gershon, lift up the heads of Bnei Gershon, and the Rambam notes that Levim are supposed to be compelled into serving the Mikdash, whether they want to serve there or whether they don't. So the Maharal explains that the people's observance of the Torah can't be based simply on volunteerism and goodwill. It needs to be based sometimes on coercion, on commitment, on the worship of Hashem. One must keep mitzvahs because the person is obligated to keep mitzvahs, not simply because he desires it. Sometimes that's an incredibly important mission, especially when life gets hard and we don't feel like volunteering. So Rav Amital Zatzal, famous Rosh Yeshiva of Har Etzion, added that many people, especially in the recent years, approach the Torah based on a spirit of volunteerism. They want to fulfill those parts of the Torah that speak to them and operate without this feeling of commitment. And that's what the Gemara's statement that Kafa Aleim Har Kegigas, that's what the Gemara's statement that when it came to Matan Torah, God suspended the mountain over them comes to teach us. Torah can only be fulfilled properly through a sense of commitment to the word of Hashem, not just doing by doing what one wants to do. And that's why it's Nasovas Rosh B'nai Gershon, whether or not they want to, this is the way it is. And we're also told of Shemos Tifkidu that you'll assign them by name a job to do. And the Torah notes that although it's mentioned in regard to the children of Merari, this idea of counting by and assigning by assignment by name applies to Kas and Gershon too. So why was it the B'nai Merari that were selected to highlight the message? So Rav Shimon Schwab Zatzal noted that those who carry the beams, namely the B'nai Merari, are symbolic of those who are donors to Torah. Kahas and Gershon, they're symbolic of those who study Torah. And in the same way that we're told when Moshe made his bracha to B'nai Yisrael at the end of his life, it says, Smach Zvulun B'tzeisecha B'Yisachar B'Olalecha, that Zvulun came before Yisachar in order to highlight the Hakara Sato for those who gave the Torah and give to compete keeping Torah active. And Merari also was noted by name to highlight that each donor is deserving of praise. We get to a crazy part in the middle of the parasha where we're told ish ish ki siste ishto, when a person comes along and suspects his wife. And what's the meaning of the sota over here? Why is that section here right at this point in time? So the Mikdash Mordechai explains that the placement of sota here, as we enumerate the ideas of family, we've been taking a census since the beginning of the Sefer, and each time we keep saying it, is Limishbechosam Levesavosam, to their idea of family. Well, in regard to building the Jewish nation, it conveys the idea that Klal Yisrael as a whole is not stronger than those individual families. And the Torah is telling us that when the basic family unit breaks down, eventually Klal Yisrael as a great nation breaks down as well. If there isn't a secure family, then the result will be a suspected Isha Sota, and eventually the whole structure collapses, since there's no Limishbechosam Levesavosam. A person has to start at the beginning, and he needs to strengthen his internal and go from beyond. We're also told after that situation, Ish o Isha, ki afli lindar neder nazir lahazir l'Hashem. A man or a woman will separate himself to make a vow to become a nazir to Hashem. So Targum Onkelus explains that he needs to explain his neder behafla, right? He has to explain it explicitly, and this is brought like halacha in the Gemara as well. So David Feinstein Zatzal noted that the implication is that one who is not explicit has a loophole. He added that one should take advantage of that loophole because Hashem prefers us not to add restrictions upon ourselves beyond those that are demanded by the Torah. And so a person needs to be aware and push to try to not take on the Neder Nazir because it's a mistake. Not in all instances, says the Gemara, but it's something that a person would rather, that the Torah would rather, you double down on your efforts in your support of the Torah and mitzvahs that we have, rather than take on more. So the Nazir goes through his whole process, and after he's done, he brings certain karbanos, and after all is said and done, then thereafter, the one who is the Nazir, who I promised, will now be able to drink wine. So why does the Torah keep calling him a Nazir? If he can drink wine, he's no longer a Nazir anymore. So they say in the name of the great holy Al-Sheikh, that the Al-Sheikh explains that since he did it to elevate his spirituality, when he stays on that level, the Torah still refers to him as a Nazir. And similarly, the spiritual growth we get from learning Torah, doing a mitzvah, or observing a yontif is meant to be not just for the Torah, the mitzvah, or the yontif, but it's also meant to be permanent as well. After the story of the Nazir and the Sotah, we're told, Ko sivarchu es b'nei Yisrael. This is how you give a bracha to b'nei Yisrael. And then we give the birchas kohanim, and then we're told, V'samu es shemiyal b'nei Yisrael v'ani avarachim. You'll put my name on b'nei Yisrael. And if a kohen duchens in one place, the question has to be raised, can he go and do so again in another place and make the same bracha again? So Mari V'Rabbi Rav Shechter Shalita reminded us that since a kohen only needs to make a bracha once a day, as is brought by the Magen Avraham, Rabbi Kiva Eger, and the Lavush, a kohen may not make a bracha in a second shul, according to them. However, the Meiri noted that one of the Tanaim noted that he merited a long life, since why? Since he never ascended the duchen without a bracha. So the Meiri says that means that even though he had already made the bracha and he was no longer obligated, he did so again, made the bracha again, and he merited a long life in the process as well. Finally, in the Haftorah, which is a fascinating Haftorah of the back and forth between the Malach and Manoach and Hatzla Funes, who is known as the wife of Manoach, and the back and forth between this couple. She came and she told her husband that a malach came to her and basically told her that you're going to have a baby. She left out one very critical piece of information. She left out that the malach says, Hinach at akara, that you are the one who was unable to have the children, which was a source of great distress between the two of them. So why did she leave that fact out? So Rabbi Yamin Eisenberger Shlita suggested that she understood that it would be easier to promote Shalom Bayis if it appeared to be authentic, not just merely a cry of, you were right. Rabbi Chaim Ephraim Zaychik Zatchal suggested that we see how hard it is to admit the truth from a person's omission. Sometimes it's impossible. I don't want to say I was wrong, so I'll just put it to the side. I won't admit it. But the Meshech Chachma notes that the real reason was so that her husband would continue to ask for rachamim by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Leaving out the information gave her an opportunity to make sure that her husband would continue to daven for her in the process. There's so much to daven for, and we hope that the Ribono Shalom will accept those tefillas, and that we'll continue to offer them B'Lev Shalem, bringing us not only to a Shabbat Shalom, but something that will be a Shabbat Shalom forevermore to all.